This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last week, the Bush administration announced plans to refocus Head Start, the big federal program that's provided meals, medical care, and playtime for millions of low-income preschoolers since the mid-60s. 5 years ago, Congress passed a law to emphasize academics in Head Start, and literacy in particular. Now, the Bush administration plans to test the more than 900,000 preschoolers enrolled in Head Start to see what and if they're learning. Proponents say it will help determine where to target resources. Critics worry that the focus on literacy will take away from Head Start's mission to help children and their families. There's also concern over whether testing 3- and 4-year-olds can be an effective way to evaluate a program, and some worry that the entire idea is really intended to discredit Head Start as perhaps a first step toward its elimination. So, how do you prepare a child for school? Do poor children have different needs? After nearly 40 years, does the Head Start program need reform, and is testing the way to go? If you're a teacher or a parent who's had experience with Head Start, join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Wade Horn, Assistant Secretary for Children and Families in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The Head Start program is under his auspices. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
It's good to be with you, Neil.
I have to begin by asking, how come Head Start is in Health and Human Services and not in the Department of Education?
Because Head Start is a comprehensive early childhood development program, and we view this program as something that delivers a variety of different services to children, including education, appropriate to preschoolers, but also health, nutrition, social services, and so forth. So it's in Health and Human Services because of the comprehensive nature of its services.
Okay. After 40 years, how's Head Start doing, in your opinion?
Well, I think that it is doing pretty well in the sense that we have good evidence that children who are enrolled in Head Start and experience the Head Start programming do better than children of similar economically disadvantaged backgrounds who do not have that kind of experience. On the other hand, we also have evidence that at least on some measures, particularly measures of early literacy development, they still lag behind their more economically advantaged peers. And so one of the things that the president would like to do is to make sure that all the Head Start programs across the country have the latest empirically based information about how to help children develop early literacy skills so that when they enter school, they are on the same par, at the same plane as their more economically advantaged peers.
I should add that in addition to being an administrator, you're a child psychologist yourself.
That's right.
And so the question, we're going to get into it more a little bit later, but about testing children this young, it's a lot of people say, boy, this is really hard.
Well, there's nothing very unusual about assessing children in their preschool years. In fact, we assess children at 1 minute and 5 minutes after they're born. It's called an APGAR score. Pediatricians assess children all the time in their offices against developmental milestones. I'm a child psychologist. I assessed children in the preschool years constantly. The question is not whether it's appropriate to assess children in the preschool years. The question is, are the methods that you're using appropriate to the child's age? There's a inappropriate way of doing it and an appropriate way of doing it. It would be very inappropriate, for example, to put 3- and 4-year-olds in rows of desks with little bubble sheets and number 2 pencils and have them fill in the bubbles. That would be an inappropriate way of doing it, but there certainly are appropriate ways of determining whether children are developing or not.
And what's the goal of these tests?
Well, there's 3 goals that we have identified for this new system. The first goal would be to help teachers in Head Start develop individualized education plans for the children while they're in Head Start. That's one of the reasons why we want to assess the children upon entry into Head Start, so there's additional information available to the teachers so that they can develop individualized educational plans. It's helpful to the teacher, for example, if they know whether a particular 4-year-old knows how to hold a book or doesn't know how to hold a book. It gives you information about how to prepare an individualized curriculum for that child. The second purpose is to help transition the child from Head Start into the public schools. This is not going to be an entrance exam for kindergarten, but rather it will give teachers, both in Head Start and the public schools, additional information that may be helpful to them in planning their kindergarten experience. And then finally, we will also use it as a way of determining whether, in general, Head Start is producing the kinds of outcomes that we'd like to see for kids, and whether particular programs may need some additional resources, training, and technical assistance in order to achieve the kinds of outcomes for children that we all want.
Obviously, tests cost money. The training the teachers how to give the tests cost time and money. Would this be, a switch of priorities or involve cutting programs elsewhere?
No, we would not cut a single child out of Head Start because of this initiative. We have plenty of money within what's called the Training and Technical Assistance Budget in Head Start in order to implement this program.
And some would say that, the goal of Head Start wasn't really about literacy in the first place.
Well, the goal of Head Start in the first place was, in fact, to help economically disadvantaged children arrive at school healthy and ready to learn on par with their more economically advantaged peers. And one piece of that, not the whole, but a piece of that is whether or not they, in fact, have the same emergent literacy skills on entrance in school that we know are predictive of the ability to acquire reading. And we know that reading is a critical skill both in school and in life, and so it's important for us, given the new research that shows the critical nature of the preschool years, to ensure that economically disadvantaged children are not disadvantaged in their academic career because they haven't developed those necessary emergent literacy skills in the preschool years.
We were mentioning just a moment ago this test. Dr. Nicholas Zill is helping to develop a national test for Head Start. He's a child and family psychologist with the project director of Head Start's National Reporting System, and he joins us now on the phone from Washington, D.C., and good of you to join us today.
Good to be here.
I know it's still in the developmental stage, but what is this test, do you think? What is it going to look like?
Well, it's going to be a one-on-one assessment with a child involving a variety of activities, taking about 20 minutes, and it's going to focus on basic skills that, as Dr. Horn was saying, are important and have shown to be predictive of later school success. And there are also school basic skills that can be assessed reliably with preschool children. So we're talking about things like pre-reading skills, recognizing letters of the alphabet, associating letters with sounds, vocabulary, early math skills, being able to recognize numbers, being able to count one-on-one. Many of these things are congressionally mandated indicators that Congress has stipulated in the most recent legislation are things that children should learn by the time they've finished Head Start.
Do you have to test three-year-olds differently from five-year-olds?
Well, actually, the national reporting system is only going to be testing 4- and 5-year-olds, those children who are in their year before kindergarten. At least initially, that's the plan.
And some say there has been criticism, as I'm sure you know, that it's extremely difficult and scattershot results testing children so young.
Well, that's not really the case, because we've actually been doing these kinds of assessments for the last 7 years in a survey program of Head Start called FACES, the Family and Child Experiences Survey. In addition, most Head Starts do assessment all the time because they screen children when they enter for disabilities, for handicapping conditions that might require attention. Certainly it is the case that children are at a variety of developmental stages, but our challenge as assessors is to come up with material that represents that full range of development. The other thing is that there is some unreliability compared to assessing older children. You know, keeping children's attention is a very important thing, and that's we try to design the assessment to keep it interesting. But you have to remember that some of that unreliability averages out when you average across the children in a class or a center. And it's important to remember the primary purpose of this is to find out how programs are doing, what added value they're providing children. It's not some sort of kindergarten readiness test for the individual child. So I think those kinds of considerations answer some of these criticisms. It's also important to remember in connection with what you mentioned before about what Head Start's purpose is that most Head Start parents very much want their children to know these basic literacy and numeracy skills. That's part of their objective in putting their children in the program. And sometimes I think developmentalists some developmentalists take a kind of elitist attitude in saying that, that Head Start shouldn't be teaching these basic skills.
Wade Horn, if a, he says it's to evaluate the program, and this is a highly decentralized program, Head Start, rather than kids, but if a program, and I'm just picking a place on the map out of a hat, if St. Louis did very badly over a course of time, what would happen as a result of that?
Well, the first thing we would do is we would work with the program, provide them with additional training, some technical assistance in the areas where they may not be achieving the kinds of outcomes we all would like for children.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would work with them in a very intensive way and then determine whether we're getting better outcomes. But if they're year after year after year, a particular program is not achieving good outcomes for children, then this would be one piece of information that we would use, not the only piece of information, but one piece of information to determine whether we might want to try a different grantee in order to achieve those kinds of outcomes for kids. I mean, I don't know anybody who would suggest that, gee, if we've got a program that's not achieving the outcomes we want for kids, and despite everyone's best effort and we're providing a training, technical assistance, resources, they continue year after year after year not to have any effect on, in a positive way on the children under their charge. I'd like to know the person who had argued that that program should continue getting taxpayers' money.
Dr. Zill, you start in the fall?
That's right. That's the objective.
Well, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your joining us today.
Okay.
Dr. Nicholas Zill is Project Director of Head Start's National Reporting System, and he was with us by phone from Washington, D.C. If you'd like to get in on the conversation again, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us on the line is Chantel from Anchorage, Alaska.
Hi, Neil. This is Chantel. I'm 26 years old, and I grew up in San Bernardino, California. My mother was a teenage prostitute drug addict. I lived with my grandmother, and I went to Head Start. And I benefited from that because by the third grade, I was in a special school for advanced children. And I was taken away from my mother's care and placed into foster care when I was about eight. And even during that time, I was in, you know, the advanced placement class and the gifted, you know, and talented education. But I needed more of it because I moved around so much and my grades suffered. But I think that the system doesn't go far enough to help disadvantaged children. And when I was in foster care, a lot of the kids were in special education, but I was in the AP classes and the honors classes, and I did fairly well. Until this day, I still believe that Head Start helped me. I'm a 26-year-old. I have a 4-year-old son, and I'm able to recognize that I make too much money to put my son in Head Start, but I recognize that the program helps children who are disadvantaged, and he's able to recognize his letters, he's able to spell his name, and I believe that that program really helped me get a Head Start. I was in the military, and I'm working on a degree in social work at the University of Alaska Anchorage, but I think that it should continue throughout a child's, you know, whole, you know, school career. And that's my comment, so I'll take a response off the air.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call.
Well, I think Chantel's story is a story that we hear over and over and over again. Head Start, in fact, positively impacts the lives of hundreds of thousands of children every year. The question is not, does Head Start have a positive impact? Part of the question is, can we make it even more effective? And the only way you can determine whether the effectiveness of a program is to measure whether, in fact, you're getting the outcomes that we'd like on the children in its care. And so this is a program which is oriented towards improving the effectiveness of Head Start. I'm also convinced that if we have this kind of system in place, what we'll find out once and for all is that, in fact, Head Start is having this kind of positive impacts that Chantel spoke about. So I think this is a reporting system that should be embraced by the entire Head Start community as one that will have very positive effects on Head Start.
Wade Horn is Assistant Secretary for Children and Families in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. We're talking about Head Start and the major overhaul in store after nearly 40 years. What do poor children really need in order to be prepared for school? When we come back from the break, we'll take more of your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the coming changes to Head Start and what it may mean for over 900,000 low-income children and their families. Our guest is Wade Horn, Assistant Secretary for Children and Families. What does it take to get a child ready for school? You're invited to join the discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now is Helen Blank, Director of the Child Care Division at the Children's Defense Fund. Head Start is part of her aegis as well, and she joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
What do you think of the plan to begin testing the Head Start children?
We're very concerned about this test because we see the Head Start program and other children's programs being starved. I'd like to know where the resources. Senate Republicans in the last week voted to cut 3% from Head Start's budget. We are about to lose 22,000 children from Head Start. This is a massive change that's being proposed. I would be very concerned about how this is going to be funded. Right now, Head Start programs use very limited money to improve the quality of program, train teachers, help teachers get their credentials so they can do a better job with children, make sure the children are in decent facilities. I don't see a nickel in the current Head Start budget that would support the massive testing of about 400,000 children. We only serve 3 out of 5 eligible children in Head Start. An early Head Start, which reaches children much younger, only reaches 3% of eligible children. We're cutting children, and yet we're implementing an unprecedented test on very young children.
Are you suspicious about the purposes of the test? Do you see ideology at work here?
I'm concerned. I think, first of all, this is a massive effort, and early childhood development experts actually don't recommend this type of test. They believe it's too narrow. So one question is, why don't we have a significant open discussion about whether to go ahead on such a test? Head Start is up for reauthorization. This spring, Congress is going to look at the program. It provides a perfect opportunity to debate the merits of this kind of test before we rush into it and have it implemented in the fall of this year. So that's one concern. I think when Congress did the Education Reform Act, there was great debate about testing young children, especially high-stakes testing, and they decided not to test children till the third grade. We are going to go ahead with a massive testing of four-year-olds without any debate. And I think it will turn into high-stakes testing because you are only looking at three aspects of a child's development, important ones nonetheless. But because the test isn't broad-based, because we don't know who's going to administer it, maybe it'll be administered by teachers, I think you face the danger of teachers teaching to the test so programs won't be defunded. I don't think we should stand for any program in Head Start that's not doing the best job possible. In the last several years, about 100 programs have been defunded because there is an extensive review process. But I'm really concerned about this being such a massive change and the way it's being implemented.
And the goal that Congress has set out, though, the idea of a greater academic aspect to Head Start, is that something that you're in favor of?
I think we all want children to do the best possible job, and we want them to have a strong early literacy background that should be a piece of Head Start. So we are in favor of that. We also think that it is essential that Head Start continue its comprehensive focus. You're talking about very poor children, and the health and nutrition and parent involvement aspects are critical to ensuring these children get off to a good start. You can have a strong early literacy focus without a test. I don't think that you need the test for a focus on early literacy.
Wade Horn, you've been listening politely. Earlier you said that this test would not take a single child out of Head Start.
And it won't. And I don't know what figures that Helen is looking at, but I know what the enrollment figures are, and we have not cut children out of Head Start. And we think there's plenty of money in our training and technical assistance budget to be able to implement this program, and we're not going to cut any children out of Head Start in order to implement this. One thing I've heard before that I find quite curious is this notion of teaching to the test. Well, if one of the things that you want is for preschool children to know that a book is a book and not a plate, you start a book in the front and you go to the back, and you don't start from the back and go to the front, the way you teach that is you show them it's a book, it's not a plate, you teach them to go from the front and go to the back. I don't know, that's teaching to the test. Well, so be it. If you think it's important, and Congress certainly did in the last reauthorization, that preschool children ought to know at least some knowledge about the alphabet, well, the way they get that is not by magic, is not they wake up one day and say, I've discovered the alphabet, isn't that wonderful? But you teach the alphabet. And so this notion that we're teaching to the test only makes sense if what you're saying is that as a problem is if what you're saying is you're teaching such a narrow range of skills that don't have any predictive value in terms of the child's later success. But the kinds of things that we will be looking at are those things that we know through science, through research, actually predict better outcomes for kids in terms of their later school success. So if we're teaching to the test on those aspects, well, you know, I guess we kind of have to.
Here's an email question we have from Mindy in Michigan. As a Head Start teacher, I'd like to know what type of training will be provided to us and what accommodations will be made for non-English speakers. We currently screen every child that enters our program. Will this new test replace the current screening or augment it?
It will not replace the current screening. Local programs are still free to use whatever locally determined process they use for screening and for assessment in terms of developing individualized education plans. This is not supposed to be a substitute for that. They can continue to do that as they are currently doing it. So that shouldn't be an issue.
Okay, let's get the listeners involved. Again, the number is 800-989-8255. Our email address, totn@npr.org. And our next caller, rather, is Richard, who's on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate
sure.
it. I just wanted to thank a lot of the people that have come out to speak in favor of Head Start. I am a teacher, actually, with early Head Start now. I taught for a regular Head Start last year. And I can tell you that the teachers are teaching the kids important reading skills, even if they are not specifically coming out and telling them this is a book. What they're doing is they're reading with the children every day in the classroom. They are engaging the children in stories. They are doing their absolute best to get their attention. What you have to understand about Head Start is that it's not only a program for children, it's a program for families. Many families in this country do not have established reading skills at home, and that is why these children are not picking up on these skills by the time they enter kindergarten. Furthermore, I've also seen numerous surveys from kindergarten teachers that are not as concerned with children being able to know the alphabet as they are with being able to know how to share with other children in the classroom, get along with other kids, follow directions, and these are things that we are working with kids every day in the classroom. And these are not necessarily things that a test like the one that is proposed can establish.
So am I hearing right that you would be opposed to this test?
I would be opposed to anything that would do anything to endanger the funding for Head Start. I work in Portland, Oregon, and we have seen our program has suffered massive cuts. We've have about $300,000 cut from our program. We are losing classrooms, we're losing kids, and we're losing families. And that's not only bad for those families, that's bad for everybody.
Are those as a result of federal cuts?
That's my understanding, yes.
Wade Horn?
Well, I can't speak to the specific program, but if you look nationally, the number of classrooms, the number of children enrolled in Head Start, they have not declined. So I don't know what's going on with that particular program, but it's not the case that nationally we're seeing a cut in classrooms or kids.
Helen Blank?
On the funding side, I'd just like to clarify something. Last year, the president recommended about $130 million increase in Head Start, which is just barely cost of living. The Senate did support a 3% across-the-board cut in programs last week. If that cut is enacted, Head Start will not have enough money to serve all the children, and we estimate they would lose 22,000 children. I think it's very important to look at the money that is being proposed to be used for the test, because those are funds that are targeted to help Head Start programs strengthen their quality. And if a Head Start program, for example, wants to help a teacher go to college so she can do a better job with her children, there'll be fewer dollars available for that. If your facility is falling apart and you need to do work on that, there'll be fewer dollars, if any, available from that. Because the Head Start budget itself will, if the Senate bill is enacted, be less for this current year than last year. There's fewer dollars available.
Okay. Richard, as you don't make an awful lot of money as a Head Start teacher, or even as... why do you do it?
Why do I do it? Well, Neil, there's more things in life than money. I have a lot of friends that, you know, make a lot of money doing engineering jobs, computer jobs, you know, working in the healthcare field, things like that. But, you know, what I get out of Head Start is something that you just can't put into monetary terms. I see the satisfaction on parents' faces when their children learn how to walk. I see the pride in children's faces when they finally are able to, you know, identify a letter in their name and write a letter in their name. It's things like that you really just can't put a price tag on, and you know, I wouldn't change what I do for $1 million.
Well, Richard, thank you for what you do, and thanks for the phone call.
Thank you. Please do not cut Head Start funding. We need it badly.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Dan, who's on the line with us from Vermilion, South Dakota.
Hi.
Hi.
I come from a slightly different perspective, but I just add to your previous caller. I'd say, please, not only don't cut it, please amplify it. I think it's the greatest program ever. It is probably the single best investment of this country anywhere. Okay. My circumstances are that I had a son who was in the Head Start program. I'm a single parent of three boys. I went through a divorce, and Daryl was two at the time. He got into the local Head Start program, not because he was economically underprivileged so much as the circumstances, and there was a slot available. I have a professional job, so I'm not underprivileged, but his experience was one that was just fantastic, and to emphasize the previous caller's comment about the family support, as a single male parent with three little kids, they were my single best source of support. They were phenomenal. The programs that were offered through Head Start for me and the family were just fantastic. And so I profited enormously, and my sons turned out to be a real well-rounded, well-liked individual who just had tremendously positive experiences in Head Start. And the other people, the families and other children that I could see in Head Start when I was there, it was just a phenomenal experience for everybody. Everybody gained so much from that. And I just think it's just the most positive thing that we're doing in this country, really. It gives everybody a shot and a sense of belonging and a sense of importance and a sense of self-esteem for these kids. There were a whole lot of programs that were involved in raising individual self-esteem. And my circumstances are a bit different, but I think that the impact was so positive. So that's my comment.
Okay, Dan, thanks very much for the call. And you'll excuse me if I'm interpolating some of the listeners' comments, but sort of what I'm hearing is concern that if there's new emphasis on literacy and new expenditures on testing, it's going to inevitably take it away from something else.
Well, we don't agree, and we think that we can both walk and talk and chew gum all at the same time. And, I mean, the question I would place to some of those who are concerned about this is this question. If we were able to determine how to make Head Start even more effective than it is, would you be against it? And if the answer is, yes, I would be, I'd be against it, then be against this program. But all we're trying to do is figure out ways to make Head Start even more effective so more children can benefit from the Head Start program.
We're talking with Wade Horn of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and with Helen Blank of the Children's Defense Fund. We're talking about Head Start, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry, who's on the line with us from Rockville, Maryland.
Hi. I'm coming from a slightly different train of thought on this, and in which I believe that a lot of the fundamentals that we're having Head Start teach the children could be better directed by teaching the parents who don't know and don't have the opportunity to help their kids, so that the parents who do control most of the factors in the life of the child and already knows about the child and doesn't have to be taught to deal with that particular child because they're already at that stage. It just makes more sense to put more of this back into the parents' hands, the whole teaching us to read. My mother, you know, had her share of major hardships in life, but managed to teach me to read before I ever had to get into the public school system.
Well, Helen Blank, isn't work with families an important element of Head Start now?
Yeah. What's interesting is the founders of Head Start agreed with the caller, and they felt that parents had to be an integral part of children's lives. That's why Head Start was really unusual in its time and is still unusual, because it has such a strong parent involvement component. You heard the caller from South Dakota talk about what this program meant to him. I see parents who just can't say enough how the program has changed them. We know that Head Start parents read to their children more. Early Head Start is a pretty quiet secret in this country. It only reaches 62,000 children, but it understands that you have to reach parents even earlier and provides exhaustive support to both young children and their parents. And that's the evaluations of Early Head Start have shown, that Early Head Start makes a difference in how parents work with their young children. And again, that's why we would like to see the program evaluated on a much more comprehensive fashion, because we think things like parent involvement are so important.
We just have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to get in an email we got from Amanda in Chevy Chase, Maryland. "I'm scratching my head," she writes, "trying to understand the problem. Everything that's been described is exactly what my daughter gets in her private preschool. She's assessed to see if she knows numbers and letters. Can she hold a pencil? Can she write and recognize her name? Can she draw simple shapes? Isn't this what we want for our poor kids, the same quality as our wealthy ones?" Helen, quickly.
I think you can do that without doing an assessment of every four-year-old in Head Start. There's a lot of other ways to learn how a program is doing. Currently, Head Start programs actually look at their children three times a year and assess them and use that information to improve their curriculum. I think if we maintain that, we continue to monitor programs, we could look more closely and more often at individual programs, that we don't have to institute what will be a costly and limited and questionable test of four-year-olds in Head Start.
And Wade Horn, you get the last word.
Well, I agree with the emailer. I don't know what the problem is. All we're saying is Head Start has certain objectives. We're going to start with objectives that have been identified by the United States Congress in the last reauthorization, and we're going to assess children to see whether they, in fact, obtain those objectives. And we will expand the system from there if necessary. We're going to do it in developmentally appropriate ways that don't require us to cut a single child out of Head Start, but in fact we'll use it as a system to make Head Start even more effective.
Thanks to you both very much. That was Wade Horn, Assistant Secretary for Children and Families in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Thanks very much for coming in today.
My pleasure.
Helen Blank, we appreciate your time as well.
Thank you.
Helen Blank is Director of the Child Care Division at the Children's Defense Fund. They were both with us here in Studio 3A. Today marks the 30th anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision. When we come back, how the United States compares with other Western countries on abortion law and public opinion. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.